Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. And it is now or never. And, you know, I have to be thankful, and I hope everybody else is saying their prayers, that, you know, we're being allowed to really dive into the facts of our history so that we can actually prove to move forward what we have to do. And so I'm really welcome back, Paul, by the way. Folks, we got Paul again because we're reading the Articles of Association. As I said yesterday, you know, we had a system, it was a monarchical system, and what they were doing in forming these assemblies was, you know, it was baked within, because we have a right to demand and petition, and we can organize, which is why in the Bill of Rights, the right of assembly and the right of petition was included. We had these rights of organizing, assembling, and petitioning. And they were basically laying out, hey, we're being the most loyal subjects. We're using the system. Mm-hmm. And we demand representation because you are taxing us. Had the king, we said this last week, had the king just been, you know, had a little bit of humility and said, you know what, we need to give these people representation in Parliament.
Right.
Now, they had they already felt the pinch, because what would they have done if all of a sudden they had to admit all of these colonies around the world into the Parliament structure? They would have had to build a new building to accommodate more people.
So
just like in America, when we hit the early 1900s and started exceeding or getting to a point where we didn't have enough seats in the House of Representatives to represent, you know, 30,000 people. And they were already playing shenanigans with that, how they were defining that. Oh, well, it's not 30,000 people. It's 30,000 voters, registered voters, what have you. I mean, they were playing that kind of game. Now, today, they're claiming that every person is entitled to apportionment, which is a direct violation of Section 2 of the 14th Amendment. They're counting illegal aliens or the invaders for apportionment. They're still doing that, even though California, with the mass exodus of people, lost, I think, 11 representatives. Remember, folks, that's a million people now for representation. They lost 11 million people in the past decade. Mm-hmm. They've lost that much representation in the House of Representatives.
Well, so here's a question. Have they really lost it? Have those representatives been taken from them? Or has California and the feds actually replaced them with, you know, used their invading army and counted them in representation? Has California actually lost the representation?
Yes, they actually, I've got it documented in one of my articles where I show where these have gone, where the representation, I think Ohio gained, you know, most of the red states have gained. I think even Illinois had gained. Yeah. Yeah. It was reflected in the reapportionment, the automatic reapportionment in the state, but it wasn't in effect in 2020. Why? Because when did we do the census? In 2020. Have they redrawn the congressional districts? No, we still use the old congressional districts. Right.
So it takes a couple of years to do that.
Well,
right?
And now we have them. We now have them because I think in the 2022, all the new seats were kind of filled because there were new seats, the readjustments of the congressional redrawing of the congressional districts. But there were 11 seats that were moved from California, and I think maybe New York or another big state might have lost one or two. But anyway, because the people have moved out of those states.
Sure.
So anyway, so when we look at what was going on at the time of the Articles of Association, the paradigm as Englishmen was that they wanted tax, you know, representation for their taxation. And because it just didn't seem, they weren't going to bend because they didn't have enough seats. They didn't want to water down their control.
Right.
Because if they only have so many seats and they start handing out, you know, access to control to the colonists around the world, well,
guess
then,
what?
Yeah, England loses its control.
Right.
So what they want to do is they want to, if they're going to, you know, add people to the table, they need to start padding the numbers on their side, and they didn't have room to pad even one.
Right.
Which is exactly what happened. So, folks, you know, how did we get here? Well, we successfully started growing. We started thriving. And the progressive movement kind of, you know, just put us on this path of moving away from our Republican principles down to democracy principles. And by 1960s, they really, with a backhand, reconfigured every state into democracies. Mm-hmm. This is why counties matter most. This is why I need to get it done. I know I need to do this. I'm going to rush this. It will be still a rough document by the time I post it. It'll be edited, but it'll be the final draft. See, a penultimate draft means it is the draft before the last. Penultimate means one before the last. Like if you have the Last Supper, there was a penultimate supper, right?
Right.
The supper before that. That was the penultimate supper. And so, believe me, I learned that term a long, long time ago when I was a kid watching Monty Python. So,
okay.
So anyway, any comments regarding the General Assembly? Anything you want, you're going to inject? Or
so there was a, well.
Because I know you're ground zero. I know you live in ground zero where this stuff is just running amok.
Well, and, you know, the other thing that I've had numerous conversations with them, particularly about them quoting British law, like the Sussex Navy Act, and the Magna Carta, and I point out to them, I said, read right here in the last paragraph of the Declaration of Independence, where we broke in one paragraph, we went from colonies to states, and we separated ourselves from the British Crown. And when we separated ourselves from those laws. We started something completely new.
Right, so, actually, right? The migration began. So
the migration began.
Right.
Okay.
The transition wasn't complete until the Constitution.
Right.
Okay.
So the migration began, but then what happens? And so they say, well, everything we've been subverted by the bar, and we've been turned into a corporation, all these British rules. And so what we need to do is go back to, you know, use the tools that they used, you know, in Britain. And I said, why would you do that? I mean, even if you succeeded, all that would happen is maybe they would recognize you as one of them. Right? And so you can't use the tools of the old system in the new system. We're not in a monarchy anymore, right? It's and so that's but I'll tell you, the other thing that happens is many people who are involved in this have been badly, badly hurt by government. They're looking for some kind of solution, and they've been hurt badly enough for one reason or another that, you know, they're on the edge, and this sounds like it. And there needs to be a new education, okay, that we need to see things as they really are and what our framers gave us. So yeah, we started the transition, and just like we talked about yesterday, where even the colonists wanted to keep the trappings of the Glorious Bill of Rights because it was in their history. They didn't have to bring, you know, Adams and Jefferson says, we don't have to do that. But you go back to history and you want to hold on to what worked, but it was in the old system. We have something completely new, completely providentially unheard of.
Right.
So, and we're really not using the tools that we have. Okay?
Right.
In fact, let's redefine assembly. Okay? Let's assemble to make petitions for our, you know, for our, we're still assembling. Let's assemble to petition our government. Use the First Amendment petition process.
Right, but so to be clear, the Constitution is we the people have a right to assemble. This is a right of the people to assemble,
right,
to associate, and to petition government for the redress of grievances.
Sure.
We don't have the ability to create a government to oppose our constitutional government. We don't have that ability. But we do have the ability to assemble and petition them and hold them accountable to the rule of law. We do have common law grand juries. Common law still is the law of the land, and we can actually form county common law grand juries. The county commissioners can allow that. They can actually call for, and if necessary, you work with the sheriff in forming one if you have a prosecuting attorney that's not willing to do this.
You know, I think we probably ought to do a show on how to make common law work, because that is something that no one understands right now. Okay. And the people in the drill assembly will tell you that the only way to do it is with the assembly.
Yeah. And so here's the problem that we also have with that, because you've heard me say this before, probably, that many of the people today that are, you know, embracing British common law do not have a constitutional context to common law in our Constitution.
Right.
Because they use Blackstone's commentaries on common law and what these things are. You know, the makeup of the court, those types of things, you know, that's not a problem. The makeup and administration of the court can transcend easily and is retained within the Constitution. But the fact is, in British common law, the Bible was the fundamental law that we used. In our common law today, the law that we are to use in common law in our courts is the Constitution. Laws that are in pursuant to the Constitution. See, the Britain actually had a Protestant Bible, Protestant faith, and so forth. I mean, it was not Catholic. It was not this other forms of religion that was, you know, basically creating ruin in Europe with all of these religious wars. The framers realized that we needed to move away from that as the law and framed a law that only delegated specific powers. So bottom line, and this goes to, I'll just say, you know, the ratification debates and where George Nicholas was the one that kind of said this. And so it's worth citing now. It says, in England, in all disputes between the king. So in other words, when there's a common law case, in disputes with the king and the people, recurrence is had to the enumerated rights of the people to determine are the rights disputed secured. Even in the common law, it is based upon what they preserve for themselves, and that was a lot of that was biblically based. Mm-hmm. Are they included in the Magna Carta, the Bill of Rights, and etc., the Bible including that? If not, then they are generally speaking within the king's prerogative. So in other words, under the old system, they had these generic things, but even with the Bible, even with the Magna Carta and the Bill of Rights in reserving and protecting these fundamental rights, as things moved on, as things progressed in England from the Glorious Bill of Rights of the 1680s to the 17, you know, like I told you yesterday, with John Adams and Thomas Jefferson in England, poking them in the eye. What happened to you? You know, you're now being oppressed by your own king, and you're not asserting your rights as Englishmen. You know, why is it that we're the ones doing that? So anyway, instead of using this old antiquated shield to guard you from government power, what they did, and this is what he says, if it's not within the Bill of Rights, Magna Carta, and et cetera, the Bible, then they're generally speaking within the king's prerogative. In disputes between Congress and the people, the reverse of the proposition holds. Is the disputed right enumerated? If not, Congress cannot meddle with it. This is such a superior process.
Right.
Did we give them that power?
Right. You know, the complete title of Blackstone's book is Blackstone's Commentaries on the Laws of England. Okay? Well, we're not under the laws of England anymore. And like you said, so the rights that we have, if it's outside of the delegated enumerated powers, the government doesn't have the authority to do that. And the people have the authority to hold the government accountable. I think that's what we're missing.
Okay? That's right.
And in fact, not only is it we're missing, here's the other problem we have. The people are looking for heroes to save them in this political quagmire we have. All right, you've got heroes being trotted out in the Republican Party and heroes being trotted out in the Democratic Party. The heroes we need are the people. They need to look in the mirror. They need to be their children's heroes to stand up for liberty.
Right.
Because that's what we need. It's the people at the counties and the local level that need to stand up and be the heroes today.
Yeah, because no one can save you. Only you can save yourself. I mean, you know, in salvation, Christ has paid that price.
Right. But
we have to accept him. We have to accept that, you know, that sacrifice. We have to accept that atonement. Mm-hmm. And so what I'm trying to say is that we still have a responsibility in everything we do, whether it's our salvation or saving this nation. Now, Christ isn't going to save this nation. He is here to basically save, you know, our souls. When he comes back, it's about, you know, putting an end to evil. But if we want to save liberty, that's on us. Mm-hmm. We have to do this. Mm-hmm. So anyway, so as you were kind of talking about being ground zero and how they're making these assertions, they have completely ignored the fact that they, as a U.S. citizen, are obligated to support the Constitution and this Republican form of government. We have to be demanding that we get back to our constitutional Republican form of government. The Constitution has not changed at all. Our government has basically taken control of itself and morphed itself outside of the Constitution, which is why we have the government that we have. So all of everything that they're asserting is not based on the truth. They're not founded or grounded on the truth and the rule of law. So let's get back to the
document.
The document, yeah. And we've got that little paragraph of the preamble. Then we can get into Article 1.
Okay. So I think I left off at... We finished the first paragraph.
The first paragraph. There's that little paragraph. Okay, yeah.
All right, here we go. To obtain redress of these grievances, which threaten destruction to the lives, liberty, and property of His Majesty's subjects in North America, we are of opinion that a non-importation, non-consumption, and non-exportation agreement faithfully adhered to will prove the most speedy, effectual, and peaceable measure. And therefore, we do for ourselves and the inhabitants of these several colonies whom we represent firmly agree and associate under the sacred ties of virtue, honor, and love of our country as follows. That's interesting.
Okay.
Okay, ready for Article 1?
Go ahead.
Okay. That from and after the first day of December next, we will not import into British America from Great Britain or Ireland, any goods, wares, or merchandise whatever, or from any other place, any such good, wares, or merchandise as shall have been exported from Great Britain or Ireland, nor will we after that day import any East India tea from any part of the world, nor any molasses, syrups, pineals, coffee, or pimento from the British plantations or from Dominica, nor wines from Madeira or the Western Islands, nor foreign indigo. Okay.
Okay.
Let's touch this for a minute.
Uh-huh.
The British East India Company, Britain was pretty big. That uh-huh. means you know, they're all over the place. And now the colonies are saying, we're not taking any of your stuff from anywhere. Right?
Well, correct. Yes.
Okay. Now, one of the things that I think they're able to get away with is because America is a rich country in resources, so a lot of things we can produce ourselves, is I believe. All right?
Right.
So in Article 1, they're saying, hey, we want to get your attention, so we're not buying any more of your stuff.
So what you really want to read, but you really want to read now so you can digest this, read Article 2.
Okay. Article 2. We will neither import nor purchase. Go ahead. Imported after the first day of December next, after which time we will wholly discontinue the slave trade and will neither be concerned in it ourselves, nor will we hire our vessels, nor sell our commodities or manufactures to those who are concerned in it. Woo! What was this, GR?
So
I never read this document before, so this is a complete surprise.
So this was the beginning of Continental Congress in 1774. And this was kind of, if you look, and actually you might be able to find out who was on the rosters, who were the delegates that were a part of this Continental Congress. But obviously political correctness was not invited into this room.
Okay.
Because the Southern states, when we go in 2 years later in July 1776, when they've probably replaced some of the delegates, because what I believe is when the Articles of Association came back and they saw Article 2 in mm-hmm. most of the Southern states, that they said, we can't have that. Mm. And so we're changing our tone because you already know, because we've read the Declaration of the original draft of the Declaration of Independence, where they cut out every mention of slave.
Right.
So in other words, they and when we read the Articles of Confederation, guess what else isn't in there?
Anything about slavery.
There right? you go. So this was a real, this is like seeing, the belly button, or this is seeing the soul of the initial movement of, this righteousness and this righteous indignation that was coming from these Englishmen that says, we're not going to be, because they realized, what the king was doing. It was actually manifested in the original draft where Jefferson laid full blame onto the crowns of England in inflicting us with a black-only, African-only slave system.
So what this is,
we're almost out of time. We're
seeing...
almost out of time. So just hold that question, hold that thought to when we come back from the break, because as we, the music all of a sudden just drowns us out and we can't have a cognitive conversation. So folks, now we've actually laid something down that you've never even heard and you never even knew, that all of the states, when they created the Articles of Association, were calling and clamoring to end slavery. Interesting. So we'll be right back after this one promo. Thank you so much.
The reason progressives are effective in instituting their policies is because they are united ideologically, financially, and socially. In addition, almost every billionaire in the world is funding a vast array of different groups, and these groups' efforts are to undermine our republic and our constitution. If you don't believe me, just Google donors to the Open Society Foundations. The only way we're going to successfully combat these efforts and take back our liberties, like our education system, healthcare, state lands, housing, labor, and many other roles, responsibilities and powers that belong to the states, is by you and I and local businesses getting involved in supporting political programs and efforts based on constitutional principles. The best way to do this is supporting result-oriented organizations designed to take back our lost liberties. The ultimate result-oriented effort is Republic Review. So please consider contributing to the show and the organizations and activities that we are supporting by going to reclaimingtherepublic.org and go to the contribution page, and you can become a listed supporter of liberty. Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416.
Okay, so now the shot was heard. They're not going to participate in this, in the Crown's manipulation of our labor market anymore.
So that seems to indicate that there was an early disposition or disinterest in slavery. Because this is kind of unequivocal. You know, like you said, political correctness was disinvited from the room with Article 2.
Or maybe they were overwhelmed by their indignation of everything from the Crown. And, you know, because when there was a revolt that actually killed a lot of colonists, when the British actually gave arms to slaves in an area where there was actually this uprising. Because that was what's that?
When was this?
Well, it's mentioned in the Declaration of Independence that, you know, not only did they create this institution, but they actually utilized that by, you know, supporting an uprising in one of the colonies to basically, you know, take, you know, have to try to, you know, emancipate the slaves by a revolution. And, you know, so Britain was playing those types of games. And they realize that, you know, they're in a system that Britain has created to literally just keep us in a mire. Does that make sense?
Okay.
This is why Thomas Jefferson made the comment. A lot of people look at it as really a harsh, you know, judgment, but of the man, because it was very, it didn't seem very empathetic. He said, you know, regarding slavery, we hold the wolf by the ears. We can no longer safely hold it nor let it go. Because if we let it go, it'll attack us. If we hold it, it's already close, and in, you know, we're already too close to the wolf. We should never have allowed the wolf to be among us. Right. Mm-hmm. It's a metaphor that basically says we're in a situation that there's no good way out.
Right.
So anyway, okay. So all right. Now the next article.
Article 3.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. As a non-consumption agreement strictly adhered to, will be an effectual security for the observation of the non-importation, we as above solemnly agree and associate that from this day we will not purchase or use any tea imported on account of the East India Company or any on which a duty hath
A duty bath.
Uh-huh. Okay. That is really bath and not half?
That is bath, and it is... in other words, it's a tax that is, you know, the tea has been soaked with a tax, a duty bath. Yes.
Okay.
Because that's what they're talking about, the duty. It's a, taxes were duties, right? Okay.
Sure. Okay. So we will not purchase or use any tea imported on account of the East India Company or on any on which a duty bath been or shall be paid. And from and after the first day of March next, we will not purchase or use any East India tea whatever, nor will we, nor shall any person for or under us purchase or use any of those goods, wares, or merchandise we have agreed not to import, which we shall know or have cause to suspect were imported after the first day of December, except such as come under the rules and directions of the 10th article hereafter mentioned.
Okay. All right.
So they're not going to import it. They're not going to drink it. They're not going to use it.
Yeah, right. And so, in other words, we're not going to be supporting the mercantile economic system of the crown.
Okay.
Right.
Article 4. The earnest desire we have not to injure our fellow subjects in Great Britain, excuse me, sorry, Ireland, or the West Indies, induces us to suspend a non-exportation until the 10th day of September 1775. At which time, if the said acts and parts of acts of the British Parliament herein after mentioned are not repealed, we will not directly or indirectly export any merchandise or commodity whatsoever to Great Britain, Ireland, or the West Indies, except rice to Europe. Okay.
Right. And
these are kind of specific.
Yeah, they are. But see, what was happening? When was China being, I'll say, mercilessly oppressed by the British crown? It was around this exact same time. So they actually saw how heavy-handed, which is one of the reasons why, you know, there was talk about the East Indies Trading Company or the West Indies. Well, I think it was the East Indies Trading Company of Britain was going to actually start coming in and managing the mercantile system in the colonies as it was doing in India.
Okay.
And so they looked at that as going, wow, I mean, that's a real threat to our liberties. These guys, you know, run up the river and kill people just to say, you know, if you're going to try to mess with us, we'll just kill you.
This was Great Britain?
Yes. Go read about the tea for opium trades that Britain was doing. And they did this for such a long time. The emperor of China basically said, we're not paying you in tea anymore for your opium. You have to pay us. Because that's what they were doing. They were giving the Chinese opium that they were bringing out of the, you know, the Bangladesh, the Pakistan, out of India. That was being exported out of India, and it was being given to them because it was this desirable, this was this great drug that everybody was enjoying. And because they got so addicted to it, the emperor of China stood up and said, we're not allowing this to happen anymore. You have to start paying us in silver. And so I forget the name of the river, the Guangzhou, maybe. It was this a major river that they were using for importation, right? Because they didn't have good seaworthy because the tide influx, you know, the flux of the tide and so forth. It was always easier to go upriver to where, you know, they were in a major river to have ports because, you know, at that point in time, a true port on the edge of the shoreline, you know, the tides made it really hard to do. And it was, we just didn't have the tools, the ability to do that, you know, with deep water digging and all of that. We had to develop that type of stuff. So, you know, interior ports, you know, along the Hudson River and so forth, that's how we really got our toe hold into, you know, importing and exporting, and then take the, you know, the labor in extending, you know, a shoreline out to where you have a deep enough water to allow for an, you know, a pier or a what they call a wharf or a mole to, you know, allow the water to, you know, and this, some of these things were floating back in those days to allow, you know, to accommodate the rise and the fall of the tide. I mean, you know, what we do today is, you know, it is a lot of technology. Back in those days, they didn't have that. But anyway, Britain was literally playing the drug pusher in China, which is why China has been playing the drug pusher in America and the world. They're only doing...
It's been done to them.
They're only doing what was done to them. In other words, two wrongs make a right. In other words, that's the mentality of the left and communism. The means justify the ends.
Or the end justifies
the means. Yeah, right. I'm sorry. Yeah, yeah. You're right.
Yeah, okay. Interesting.
Okay.
Well,
so...
Okay. So we got... So... excuse me. There's something specific about the right to Europe. Okay, they kind of carved that out of their export ban.
Uh-huh. Okay?
And I was just you think that had to do with China?
No. I honestly think that the rice to Europe. Where was rice coming from?
Well, it wasn't coming. I don't think it was coming from the U.S.
Okay, right? So now look at this. So this is what they're saying. We will not directly or indirectly export any merchandise. So this is what we're sending or commodity whatsoever to Great Britain, Ireland, or the West Indies, except. So in other words, where was the rice coming from? It was actually It was coming from the Carolinas. That's where they were growing. Remember, the black slaves were running the rice paddies and so forth. We were actually producing rice in America.
I didn't know that. And so, but they are carving out an exception to rice.
Yes, okay? Because
and they're saying, go ahead.
Because they badly needed that. Absolutely, they needed to be able to export that because it was. Okay. It was kind of one of the cash crops, as well as tobacco.
Okay. All right. And they said rice to Europe. Okay. Uh-huh. So they're being specific about where it's going. I'm just finding that interesting. They're wording. So in that time, every word meant what it said. Okay. They weren't careless with words.
Right.
I just thought that stood out.
It does. It does because it's indicative of what they felt was important. You know, okay, we'll continue this, but all of this other stuff we're not going to do.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. So Article 5.
And no, this is not the amendment process. This is not the amendment process. Go ahead.
Okay. Such as our merchants... and use the British and Irish trade will give orders as soon as possible to their factors, agents, and correspondents in Great Britain and Ireland not to ship any goods to them on any pretense whatever, as they cannot be received in America. And if any merchant residing in Great Britain or Ireland shall directly or indirectly ship any goods, wares, or merchandise for America in order to break the said non-importation agreement, or in any manner contravene the same, on such unworthy conduct being well attested, it ought to be made public, and on the same being so done, we will not from thenceforth have any commercial connection with such merchant. Wow. In other words, don't try to get around this, or we'll cut you off.
Now, right? Actually, when you look at how America, in the last century, has kind of dealt with adversaries in the world,
mm-hmm.
how we usually used economic sanctions against them.
Mm-hmm.
And so they, even at this time, they possessed that kind of leverage to be able to, mm-hmm. Inflict economic sanctions.
And I trust that these will be reasonably effective because Britain was greatly dependent on its benefits from the colonies.
From the trades, correct, yeah.
Right. Article 6. That such as are owners of vessels will give positive orders to their captains or masters not to receive on board their vessels any goods prohibited by the said non-importation agreement on pain of immediate dismission from their service.
Yep. So, we're serious. Keep going. Article 7.
Article 7. We will use our utmost endeavors to improve the breed of sheep and increase their number to the greatest extent. And to that end, we will kill them as seldom as may be, especially those of the most profitable kind. Nor will we export any to the West Indies or elsewhere. And those of us who are or may become overstocked with or can conveniently spare any sheep will dispose of them to our neighbors, especially to the poorer sort, on moderate terms. So in other words, sheep were apparently a thing.
Uh-huh.
People ate more sheep, they ate more mutton, and they're saying, we're going to keep our sheep.
Okay, so let's think about how the whole textile industry shifted because of America and this product called cotton. What was the primary fabric that was being used at this time technologically? It was wool.
It's wool.
Thank you. In other words, we're going to declothe you.
Right.
Or in other words, you're not getting that. And as a matter of fact, remember, the raw goods were shipped from America. And they were sent to England for fabrications, manufacturing, and so forth. Once we broke away from England and we started going, you got to remember, we've talked about this between this philosophical argument between Thomas Jefferson and Alexander Hamilton.
Mm-hmm.
So what that argument was Alexander Hamilton believed that America's future was in textiles, manufacturing, and the industrial age. Jefferson felt that the agrarian age. Now, to be clear, it's interesting. There are really good things about the agrarian society. It's a much more righteous society.
Mm-hmm.
But it also lent towards slavery. And because the North was actually reaching into the new form slavery of companies, corporations, and so forth, and migrating away from, actually slave labor forces, because instead they had employees. And, you know, which is why, you know, in the wintertime, the employees, when the raw commodities weren't coming in, where they couldn't manufacture goods, there was this flow. I mean, it wasn't a constant flow because we had channels of distribution in those days to keep everything coming in, every month of the year. The weather and the seasons affected us, and so we could actually see how, during the winter months, and I talked about this on Christmas, that, during the winter months, those people that were living in the city, they didn't have a lot of resources. They couldn't grow their own food, or they were very limited of what they could do. And, so they had to kind of hunker down because even work was, shut down. Work was slowed down. We had this ebb and flow that was a part of the cycle of the annual cycle of the seasons. Which is why the winter became the time of being riotous, getting drunk, and just, trying to survive the winter so that you could, start anew in the spring.
Right.
Does that all make sense? I mean, we're really kind of seeing how that society was far more rigid. It wasn't like this constant, you can buy strawberries any day of the year now.
Right.
Back in those days, you could only get the fruits and things of the season, or you had to, have to preserve them in some way.
Well, they didn't have refrigeration, and so
They had
to do different. They had to do it when it was available.
Excuse me. They absolutely did, and they came up with mechanisms of surviving. And drinking was a good. Part of that, because it got your mind off of it too, right?
Okay, sure. So are you ready for Article 8?
Yeah, so go ahead. Yes.
Okay. We will, in our several stations, encourage frugality, economy, and industry, and promote agriculture, arts, and the manufacturers of this country, especially that of wool. and will discountenance and discourage every species of extravagance and dissipation, especially all horse racing and all kinds of games.
Gambling. They're talking about gambling, right.
Yeah, plays and other expensive diversions and entertainments, and on the death of any relation or friend, none of us or any of our families will go into any further mourning dress than a black crepe or ribbon on the arm or hat for gentlemen and a black ribbon and necklace for ladies, and we will discontinue the giving of gloves and scarves at funerals. JR, what does this have to do with their trade with England?
So there were laws, you know, and as a matter of fact, this was brought up by Madison in his essay on property. So think about it, because we were living at a time where government was actually dictating if you were going to have a funeral, you had to buy the linen for your, you know, the burial of a person, because that back in those days they didn't have, you know, coffins and so forth. So at a minimum you had a linen, and so instead of you making your own linen, you had to buy a specific linen from somebody, because that's how government was oppressing them. And so they're only showing you how they were discontinuing certain things that they viewed as oppressions, because, you know, you had to, if you're going to, you know, mourn for somebody, there was obviously something that was considered the formal dress, and you had to buy this formal, you know, attire. It was literally that bad. The mercantile system was pretty oppressive, where, you know, they were making laws that you had to buy certain things to ingratiate, just like we see today. Who is going to publish the books for our education system? There are only one or two publishers in the United States now that publishes textbooks for education. They have chosen who can actually do these things. They've narrowed the field, or they've, you know, by granting contracts, they've eliminated competition. We don't have a free market system in America. We have a mercantile system, just like what England was doing. In other words, we went from a free market system and started slowly implementing this mercantile system and all of these controls. We're doing all the things that they were doing that we have no constitutional authority to do. And we have to stop all of it. All of it. It's the magnitude of the tyranny we are living under is just hard for people to fathom. In right. every direction we look at these things, and it's something that's working, but it is in some way or another tyrannical.
And over the years, our conditioning, it's been tolerated, okay? Because from generation to generation, you don't see the change. You know, I'm glad I was born when I was born and raised when I was raised, because the difference is dramatic.
Oh, okay, yeah, absolutely. Sure.
Right. And so now let me ask you this other thing. Right in the middle here, where they want to discourage and discountenance horse racing, games, cockfighting, expositions, shows, plays, and other expensive.
That's all gambling and what they consider elitist lifestyles.
Okay.
So you know, what people that have
we're going to back away from this.
Right. So in England, they had these systems to get people to part with their money, gaming and those types of things. So if you had enough money, we call it disposable income, right? I mean, you have an income that you need to function, survive, and everything else. So all that extra loose change is disposable. And so people in America were becoming, you know, entertained. As a matter of fact, it was a big deal when they had a play in Philadelphia, when the federal government was operating in Philadelphia. As a matter of fact, I remember reading how Washington enjoyed going to the plays.
Okay.
In other words, when you're reading this, Washington was kind of an elitist, because he liked to spend, because he was rich.
Okay.
He had disposable money to where he could actually go and be entertained. Look at, everybody wants entertainment, and most people in these days couldn't be entertained. It was truly an elitist act. And they considered that a, you know, one of those scourges that, you know, was perpetrating or basically coming into America. Because so they saw
entertainment diversions and looks like, oh, entertainments, diversions, gambling.
Yeah.
These are things that they simply said, were telling Britain, we're walking away from these practices that you have used to separate us from our money.
Right. That you guys have slowly, you know, started creating, right? Because all of these things were evolving and they were landing here. Right.
Wow. Okay. Article 9. Okay. There are a few of the, we're not going to finish this today, but this is really interesting.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Article 9. Such as are vendors of goods or merchandise will not take advantage of the scarcity of goods that may be occasioned by this association, but will sell the same at the rates we have been respectively accustomed to do for 12 months last past. And if any vendor of goods or merchandise shall sell such goods on higher terms or shall in any manner or by any device whatsoever violate or depart from this agreement, no person ought, nor will any of us deal with any such person or his or her factor or agent at any time thereafter for any commodity whatever. It right. sounds like they are warning against price gouging, maybe?
Yes, and yes, and they're setting the stage to where, you know, they're in a way they're kind of creating a collective movement that we're all resolved to separate ourselves from these things and these practices that, you know, are dividing us, or those things that are causing, the division is the best word. It's dividing us. Those people with disposable income, in a way, this is almost the political correctness view.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, wow. You know, we don't want, I mean, because we have elitists, we really want to trim down any of that behavior here because, you know, we're all in this together and we're all going to suffer together. In a way, this is not communism collectivism, but this is this, you know, a unifying movement that says, you know, we're now saying that we're not going to do these things. We're not, you know, we're going to kind of temper ourselves and we're going to hunker down and we're in this together.
Yeah. Okay. I don't think we have time to read Article 10. This has been extremely, not just interesting, but educational. I was not familiar with this document, and the history that it shares is profound.
Yes, it is. And so it lays a tone of how unified, I say this all the time, the framers, because they were so like-minded, they were quick to put aside their differences and their self-interests, because some of these men were affluent and knew that they wanted to enjoy but they were willing to put aside those interests for the greater cause of liberty. And so, folks, we'll have Paul back again, and in our next episode, we're going to finish this up, and then we'll start, you know, slowly talking about how the Revolution and the Articles of Confederation came to be. I mean, it was pretty quick right after this, on the heels of this, actually. So this is all critical so that we know what to do and how to move forward. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
Reclaiming the Republic is more than an educational radio show. My intent is to also work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is the only radio show in the world asserting a constitutional solution to federal overreach. Download and share our podcast and content. Read, like, follow, and share our Mobiusstrip Press and Reclaiming the Republic pages on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Mobiusstrip News. Get informed about local groups in the area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you.